Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the sixth episode of the Feuerstein's Fire Soccer Podcast Show. I am your host, Daniel Feuerstein, and I'll be discussing the game from an American perspective with our clubs, leagues, national team, and other fabulous moments. You can get your daily reading from me and other writers at MajorLeagueSoccerTalk.com, a member of the EPL Talk family of websites. And don't forget the EPL Talk and MLS Talk podcasts hosted by Richard Farley. Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to make an announcement. Apologize to you folks on what sounded like didn't sound good to me. While I did listen to the replay of last week's show, I was relieved that the audio sounded fine. But while doing the show live and talking to my guests here in the studio, the audio sounded like crap when I thought the voices of my guests went from normal to cartoonish. I honestly thought the changes that I made were fixing the problems, that it went horribly wrong, and the show didn't have the great quality that I try to give you folks for the last 5 weeks. Thankfully, I was wrong, and the quality of my show is there. But to be honest with you good folks, I was very nervous when the voices of my guests sped up inside my headset, and right away I thought I made the biggest blunder of my early podcast show producing life. But thank goodness everything is fine, and I know now that what happened through my headset didn't happen through the player with you good folks. Before we get on with the show, I just wanted to say hello to my new listeners, Bob and his kids from Sloatsburg, New York, who traveled down to Secaucus Junction Transfer Station in New Jersey to get the train towards Newark, had asked me to help them out getting over to Red Bull Arena. And I did my best. It took a bit long to do it, but I was very happy to help them out and have new listeners to this podcast and readers of Major League Soccer Talk. And now it's on. Out of his ears and the red-hot glow around his body, Edson Buttle just can't be stopped. As Dan Patrick has said, you can't stop him, you can only hope to contain him. 7 goals in 4 matches for Buttle, and Landon Donovan keeps on feeding him the ball as Beckham is still taking his Italian vacation since he won't be on the field for England this World Cup and not finishing off the Italian Serie A season with Milan. I will still campaign for Buttle to get a shot at the 2010 USA World Cup squad this summer. If he is scoring like crazy and surpassed his goal last year, something good has finally come his way. In the battle, it was the Chicago Fire who broke out first. And it was late in the second half as Marco Papa and Brian McManus scored both goals to leap the team near 8th or 9th. Again, for DC United, this is unfamiliar territory for them. 4 straight losses, 11 goals allowed, and a differential of -9. In my lifetime, I never thought I would see DC start to the season like they are having right now. But like I have said, Kevin Payne will find a way to right the ship, and I don't think that would mean sacking Kurt Anolfo. After Chivas USA gets their first win of the season, they headed on the road to play the Houston Dynamo. And all of a sudden, it went back to the same old story. They got spanked with 3 goals from the Orange Crush. And if you watched the Thursday night match of the week, how great was it to see BL finally play with a natural grass field? I could see the big lines on the grass as my friend after TFC got rid of the field turf. Whatever nice polo shirt he was wearing that night, I bet he will frame it with so many grass stains on it. I can see it now, a plaque at the bottom of the frame, and it reads, "I rolled around the grass every minute of it." Now, I'm just kidding, Dwayne, but seriously, thank goodness that another MLS stadium is using the real thing. Now, only 2 stadiums are using field turf, New England and Seattle. U.S. Open Cup qualifying for MLS this past week. Wells Thompson scores a break goal to the Kansas City Wizards. But what a match between the Earthquakes and Real Salt Lake as both sides went through regulation with a 2-2 draw, both sides with a goal each in extra time, and a big penalty shootout round that had RSL edging the Quakes 5-3. If this can't get on TV for the U.S. Open Cup, then nothing will, and that is a damn shame. Eric Soler has become the sporting director for Red Bull New York. I have to say that it has been a very good thing to see that he is taking care of business by bringing in quality players domestically and abroad. Now, I want to play this audio clip for you folks from MSG Network's Red Bull New York postgame show. Soler was interviewed by both Steve Cangelosi and Shep Messing. He had this to say about the quality of the league and the American player.
That should happen, in my opinion. I think that the problem for American soccer is that people underestimate the quality, simply because they don't know. I mean, Hans Backe and myself, everybody said to me, oh, American soccer, that's like a ping-pong league. It's not true. It's a good league. There are good quality players. There are exciting games. There are a lot of spectators. I'll tell you, I think we have like 18,000 on an average in this league. Mm-hmm. You can tell me more than two European leagues having average of 18,000. You can't, because it doesn't exist. This is a big league going forward. There's loads of opportunities, and I'll tell you, one day we'll fill this arena on every game.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you want the latest gear on this summer's World Cup in South Africa, then the Premier Soccer Shop is the place for you. They have tons of USA jerseys, training shirts, jackets, and of course, the top football club jerseys from Europe and South America and other national teams. Not only do they have balls and boots, but they will customize your USA jerseys of your favorite players with the official USA numbers and letters from US Soccer. If you're from the New York City, Northern New Jersey area, head on down to Hoboken and get your gear at the Premier Soccer Shop at 157 First. Call the shop at 201-533-8900 or go online at www.premsoccershop.com. They are on Twitter and Facebook as well. Here are April 22nd, the ESPN2 Match of the Week. FC Dallas hosts Seattle Sounders at Pizza Hut Park, 8 p.m. Eastern. Now on Saturday, April 24th, the Telefutura Match of the Week, Red Bull New York hosts the expansion side Philadelphia Union at Red Bull Arena. Also locally in the tri-state area of New York City, MSG Network. New England Revolution hosts the Colorado Rapids at Gillette Stadium, 7:30 p.m. Eastern. Locally in Boston on Comcast Sports, KWGN Channel 2 in Denver. Kansas City Wizards host the Los Angeles Galaxy at Community America Ballpark, 8:30 p.m. Eastern, locally in Kansas City, KCWE, and FSN West in Los Angeles. Chicago Fire hosts Houston Dynamo at Toyota Park, 8:30 p.m. Eastern, locally in Houston TV and Forma. The Fox Soccer Channel Match of the Week, CD Chivas USA hosts the San Jose Earthquakes at the Home Depot Center, 10:30 p.m. And on Sunday, April 25th, Toronto FC hosts Seattle Sounders at BMO Field. Local TV in Canada will be CBC Sports, and in Seattle, King Channel 5. And of course, if you're not locally able to watch these games, don't forget the Direct Kick package from MLS. Check your local cable or dish. Ladies and gentlemen, I have another great show for you today. My good friends from CSRN's original Around the League in 90 Minutes, Warren Jones will be coming on discussing the Dynamo, and the deal is done for a brand new stadium that will be ready for April 2012. Hank Alexander will also come on the show after the NASL segment as I shorten the Red Bull New York Hour to 45 minutes. And Mr. Alex Hauter of the Minnesota Stars in the North American, he will be with us on the NASL segment. But very soon, my first guest coming on the show is Mr. Jeff Reed, who is from the South Jersey, Philadelphia area, and Philadelphia Union. And to be honest, They have had a decent first three matches of the season. And for those of you that are not familiar with the state of New Jersey and the whole setup with the suburbs, northern New Jersey is closer to New York City, and in South Jersey, it's those who move down there. And Mr. Reed will be discussing the union with us in a matter of moments. And ladies and gentlemen, I have to say that the Philadelphia Union have looked very good so far in their first couple of matches. Obviously, Sebastian Latou, who was brought over in the expansion draft from the Seattle Sounders, has been his goal-scoring machine self again. Scored a hat-trick against DC United. Of course, he scored the first two before DC and then the free at the end of the second half. The hat-trick for Sebastian Latou. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to apologize right off the bat. I'm fighting a bit of a cold now, so if my voice doesn't sound like it's up to par, I got a bit of a cold right now, so hopefully that will be fixed towards the end of the show, or hopefully towards the middle of the show. Hopefully it will not be a problem for you guys. But other than that, let me just say that I'm very, very happy to see four solid weeks of Major League Soccer, a lot of action, a lot of excitement. And, of course, some disappointment, but that's the name of the game. Coming week end, and hopefully round five will be just as exciting as round four was. So very soon we'll be Philadelphia. And once again, the Philadelphia Union having a pretty good start, I would have to say. Won 3 points out of three matches, not bad. And, of course, at the moment, their home PPL park is not finished, but it will be done by the middle of this year. Great turnout for the first home match over at the Lincoln Financial Field. That is at Philadelphia. Of course, that is the home of the Philadelphia Eagles of the NFL and the whole sports complex area. And, of course, the Philadelphia Phillies at their new baseball, at their baseball stadium, Citizens Bank Park. But it was nice of the Eagles to allow the Union to make their home for them a temporary one till PPL Park will be ready down in Chester, Pennsylvania. And for those of you that are not familiar with the northeastern Pennsylvania area, Philadelphia is just about, I believe, 5 to 10 minute drive north of Chester. And where the stadium will be right next to the Harris Casino and, of course, the Commodore Bay Bridge, which will lead from Delaware over to Philadelphia and South Jersey as well. And it's going to be a fun time for everyone in Philadelphia. It's good to see some support for them. And ladies and gentlemen, right about now, we are going to give a phone call to Mr. Jeff Reed. He will be waiting for us, so here we go. Jeff Reed, it's Daniel Feuerstein on the show. You are on live. How are you, sir?
I'm fine, thank you, mate. How about yourself?
Doing very good, very good. So, Mr. Reed, how does it feel to see the Philadelphia area have finally upside to support? Go ahead.
Okay, never mind. I was going to say, yeah, it feels fantastic. Of course, you know, I mean, I didn't grow up in this area. I grew up, back in the UK because of my dad's work. But my dad was a season ticket holder for the New York Cosmos way back in the day. But he also went to the Philadelphia Athens, like, matches, and I think it was the Fury were here as well. And, of course, the last team died out, I think it was 1980. And it's just been, like, a long, long wait since then. And my dad was absolutely ecstatic with it, to be honest with you. Because when the team was first announced, I guess it was Philly and I think it was St. Louis were also, bidding on that, you know, that expansion spot for 2010. And I had my doubts. I was thinking, well, St. Louis, there's a lot of history there, you know, with you know, U.S. soccer and all that, and my dad was reminding me, well, you know, Philadelphia also has a lot of, you know, soccer history as well. And and you know what? I mean, my doubts have gone since then. It's just been, it's been a great momentum builder. I mean, now it's not been like the Sounders, but it's been, it's been quite a ride so far, and it's good to see this team finally come into the reality, I guess. So, it's absolutely brilliant. It's fantastic.
Now, we all know that the Sons of Ben, who are the diehard support group of the Union, obviously at the time there was no, probably not even a thought of this. I mean, what makes you think, or what's your opinion of how they were able to convince not just Don Garber, but that they're ready to bring in a professional side to the Philadelphia area?
Yeah, they've done a fantastic job. And, I mean, I've never met Brian James and company in person myself before, but from what I was reading, I guess their first meeting was around, I'm going to say, 2006, I think, is my estimation, from what I've heard. And it was, he said it was himself and maybe two other guys. And that was the Sons of Ben. And between, like, then and now, I guess they've grown to about, it's like over 5,000 fans now. Or 5,000 members, actually, should I say, in that group. And to be honest, if it wasn't for them, this team would really not exist right now. What they've managed to do is, you know, convince Don Garber that, you know, this is the right market, you know, this is a good market for the game, you know, and it's a rivalry with, you know, your DC Uniteds and obviously, you know, with your Red Bulls. And the other funny thing is, and what I was thinking before, actually, before you called, was the fact that, supposedly they would want to put a team in Philadelphia since the very beginning, since 1996. But what happened was, at the time, there was just Veterans Stadium, and that was it. And obviously the Eagles use that as well as the baseball team, the Philadelphia Phillies. And it just wasn't editable for, you know, the beautiful game. And then anybody who knows Veterans Stadium, who's been there or just, you know, seen and heard about it, knows that it was a dump. It was an absolute dump. And there was just no way you could play... you could play the game there. So, go back to your original question. What the Sons of Ben did was basically was just fantastic work. You know, they pushed on. They did, not only did they convince Don Garber, but they kind of like started the whole momentum swing where they convinced Don Garber, and Don Garber was there for to be able to convince the mayor of Chester, I guess Governor Rendell of Pennsylvania, that this was a good idea. You know, for the city of Chester as well, the whole complete redevelopment package that they did, and to, I guess, start getting Chester going in the right way, because, you know, it was a booming city for years, and then all of a sudden, for the last, like, 50 years or so, I think, it's been, like, run down, and they, you know, they convinced that, you know, the local government was going to be a great thing for the city of Chester, so they've done fantastically. But yeah, it all started with the Sons of Ben, really, and great, great credit goes to them.
Now, obviously, you attended the first home match of the Union at the Link, correct?
Actually, I didn't. I was actually at the Revolution home opener instead.
Oh, my. And you call yourself a Union supporter. My goodness. No, I'm just joking. But were you able to watch it on TV, though? Were you able to watch it on TV? Did you record it or DVR it?
I watched it on the new MLS Match Day package they have, but both my parents were actually at that game, as well as my uncle was, and they had a great time, they said.
Sure, I heard the whole lower bowl was almost completely filled, and of course seeing a hat trick from Sebastian Letou must have gotten them off their seats a couple of times.
Yeah, you know, it was great. My dad, like, I guess, like, called me as the Revolution game was finishing. So I guess, like, I think the Union DC match finished before the Revs and Toronto match did. And he was just saying how pumped he was. He said there was almost 35,000 there. It was just under 35,000, and there was a mixture of everybody there. He said he saw some old, Fury or Atoms, shirts, back in the day, and going back on the field, I mean, it was incredible, really. I mean, it's kind of ironic, I think, how Seattle have been known for having scoring troubles right now, and, you know, Sebastian Latu scores a hat-trick in that game, and, you know, kind of let him go in the expansion draft, which, you know, it's kind of ironic, I think, really. But, you know, there you go.
Yeah, I think the Union lucked out getting Latu in the expansion draft since he was left unprotected. So right now you went club went to Seattle to open the season, and obviously the first red card to a Mr. Stahl, who say it was a little bit more of roughhousing than defending, but then again we don't know, that might be Philly's way of defending. But then again, area. Obviously, you have Washington, D.C. in the, you know, south of you, and of course, you is where I am in the New York, and of course, north of me is New England, and of course, it's the whole, well, if you want to talk NHL, NBA, Bruins, Rangers, Flyers, Caps, Wizards, 76ers, Knicks, and Celtics. Can you really see Red Bulls, Revolution, Union, and D.C. United be an excellent rivalry up and down Interstate 95?
I can. I think the problem originally, I mean, obviously, you know, the Red Bulls and, you know, old Metro Stars had a great rivalry with DC United, but even though it's up and down 95, there wasn't really that close, real close proximity, especially between DC and New York, especially with Philadelphia sandwiched in the middle. And obviously, you know, Boston teams and New York teams have always had that rivalry anyways, in every sport. But I think it's funny, going back to what Drew Carey said about when, I guess, when Portland and Vancouver joined in 2011, calling it, I think it was the Triangle of Death, I think.
So, you know, yeah.
You can kind of interpret that to this as well, with the four clubs. Especially, I think, Revolution a little bit farther away from, you know, the other three teams, but certainly between New York, Philly, and D.C., you know, they're so close together that, you know, you'll see Red Bulls fans come down to, you know, obviously RFK, and then the Barra Brava, you know, I think it was a good thousand of them, maybe more, came to the link, I heard, for the Union opener when D.C. played. And I think you're going to see quite an intense rivalry. I mean, I think it's not going to be on the same, you know, your levels as, like, you know, the Eagles playing the Giants, for example, or anything like that. But certainly, it's definitely a good thing. And it's definitely a good thing because the league, like, needs these type of rivalries, you know. And Don Garber always goes on about how, you know, the league needs more close rivalries and, you know, your local rivalries and stuff. And what they're going to have in the Pacific Northwest, I guess, next year and onwards, I think, you know, it's going to be matched just as intensely, you know, on the East Coast. So, I can't wait. I think it's going to be so much fun.
Yeah, exactly. And, of course, your side's coming up this Saturday to Red Bull Arena, not just for a league up, but also an Open Cup qualifier on next Tuesday night on April 27th back at Red Bull Arena. Will you be able to take, would you be able to make both matches if you're able to?
Unfortunately, I got to work my day job on Saturday, so I'll miss the league match, but I haven't seen my schedule for the Open Cup match in a week's time, but I'll tell you, if I'm off that day, I would absolutely love to drive up to Red Bull Arena. I mean, I want to get up there anyways, because obviously, you know, everyone's heard so much about it and said all the same, you know, great things, and I'm definitely going to be checking it out. But the more likely one would definitely be the Open Cup match, for sure.
Well, I don't want to brag or anything, because I've already been there three times, and I am in heaven. I'm in cloud nine every time I step inside Red Bull Arena and get to the press box, just located just behind the players' benches in the lower bowl. Yes, it's absolutely fantastic, Mr. Reed. I can't complain, not one iota. No, I'm just joking.
Oh, yeah, you got. I mean, Red Bull Arena by far is hands down the best stadium in the league. I mean, I know Sounders fans, you know, they have a point. You know, I mean, obviously, Quest Field is spectacular as well, you know, when it's been sold out, but that was built for NFL as well as, you know, the MLS purposes. I mean, Red Bull Arena was just built specifically for, you know, football, and there's no concert stage, there's, you know, none of that crap that's basically, you know, that you see in, you know, the other stadiums that were built, I guess, earlier in the decade. Although, you know, we got a nice little stadium being built right now at the, in Chester that was just, they just laid the sod there yesterday, and they're still laying it today, I think, and that's coming along really nicely, and it should be ready by, I think it's June 27th when the Sounders come to town, so that'll be a very important date, certainly for us.
Yeah, I can't wait for Chester to have the PPL Park, I believe, correct?
Yes.
Yeah, PPL Park. If I say it one more time, I feel like I'm going to the bathroom, but that's all right. no, but seriously, I have said all the time, Jeff, that, you know, this league needs their own stadiums. I keep repeating myself, I know, but, I mean, you have to hammer it in. You can't rent a stadium to have, you know, to play, like, more than 15 years. You got to own the darn thing. You know, very, very happy to see that I believe it's the iStar Group that is running the club to have the stadium built. Obviously, it's a little behind schedule, but very happy to see that there is a stadium that is near completion.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, like going back what I said before, I mean, the whole, I guess, convincing like local government that this was going to be good for the city of Chester. And I guess there was a job fair, I guess, this past weekend where to fill positions at the stadium, over 600 positions, and that's just going to create jobs right there for, you know, Chester and the local area and community. And, you know, but like you were saying, go back to the, you know, the MLS side, though, every team needs their own stadium, that's a fact. You know, I guess the old saying was, I guess, you know, build it and they will come. But, you know, that doesn't necessarily ring true in, like, places like Dallas, you know, really. So I got to do more on the, I guess, the marketing side. But certainly location-wise, it's fantastic. I mean, the stadium itself is literally 15 minutes from my house. You know, I just got to go across the Commodore Barry Bridge and, well, pay a $4 toll. But, you know, that'd be worth it during game day time.
Exactly, yeah.
It's great for the club and, you know, for the game and, you know, just for the whole, I guess, local area in general.
No, definitely. It really is. And, of course, you can always gamble a little bit after the match or before the match.
For sure, yeah, the casino. I'm not much of a gambler myself, but, you know, every time I bet, I always seem to lose. You know, so, but, hey, you know, if you want to go there, the casino, then, hey, great. You know, all the power to you. And that was another part of the whole redevelopment plan, I think, for Chester as well. Was a casino. One of, like, many things, and obviously the stadium is looking like a crown jewel, I guess, in that package. So, you know, we'll see how it goes. Hopefully it works well for the local area.
Exactly. And I also understand there's also, is there a SEPTA train station, you know, and the stadium?
I'm not sure about the train, actually. There very well could be. Obviously, you know, I haven't looked into it because I know from my end I can just, you know, drive 15 minutes and, you know, go across the bridge and you know, get there. But I would think there is because Chester's, like, on the way towards, like, you know, Wilmington, Delaware. I know on the train stops, and I'd have to look into that. But there's certainly, I would, you know, there should be. I wouldn't be surprised about that. I know public transportation will be pretty good. Certainly, if people coming from, you know, north of Chester, like just near the Philadelphia area, I know public transportation will be very, very easy. So I've been told about that. But certainly, I have to look into that, but I'm sure that is the case, yeah.
And finally, what type of season are you expecting from Philadelphia Union? I know it's an expansion year. It's your very first year in the league. What are you expecting at all from this club?
To be honest, I kind of expected how they've been performing so far. I mean, they've been competitive in the first three matches, and I think that's going to continue. And obviously, Peter Novak teams are obviously very competitive. But certainly, you know, they're not hiding, and they're definitely. I mean, this is going to be a long shot to make the playoffs for sure. But they're often a big, like, Toronto were in their first season. They were like Chivas or, you know, Real Salt Lake. in their first seasons. I think they might be somewhere in between, you know, better than what San Jose did in 2008 when they, you know, they came back into the league, but not as good as what the Sounders were. But I mean, certainly if you go back to the Toronto game, certainly if it wasn't for two really dumb, stupid mistakes, they could have won that game, basically. And they could easily have two wins on the board right now. And the game in Seattle, they certainly play well. But I think they did. I mean, granted, yeah, Tony Stoll made, again, another really stupid mistake, which didn't help anything either. But I think they'll do okay. I think they'll be very competitive. And I think that's really all you can ask for from an expansion franchise, especially, you know, a team with, in his first season only. But I think they're going to do okay for an expansion side. Novak's, you know, built young so far, especially in the draft. He's, you know, built a lot of, he's got a lot of young players, a couple of veterans, but I think this team's definitely built for the future. And I think we're going to get sort of an indication this season of, you know, what they can do, certainly, in, you know, next season, two seasons from now, you know, and so on. I think the team really could be a force to be reckoned with soon, in the coming years. But certainly this season, yeah, they'll be competitive for sure. But, you know, it's wrong to expect too much from them. And obviously Seattle just set the banner for every expansion team. But, yeah, the Union, they'll do okay. They'll do okay. Yeah. So, yeah, I would say, you know, future looking, you know, bright. And I just think everybody should keep that in mind, really.
Jeff, thank you very much for joining me today. Once again, congratulations on having your own MLS side, and good luck with you and the rest of the Philadelphia Union supporters.
Thanks. Yeah, thank you, sir. Yeah, thanks for having me on, and yeah, I'll be speaking to you soon, I'm sure.
Yes, you will. Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Mr. Jeff Reed, Philadelphia Union supporter. It's very, very great to finally see Philadelphia actually get an MLS side. Bulls this coming Saturday in a league tilt, and of course next week Tuesday, Open Cup qualifier. But as we all know, being fans of this league, there are those that did take a former original side and make it their own, also hunting for their own stadium. And that is the Houston Dynamo, ladies and gentlemen. My good friend Warren Jones is awaiting to speak with us. With the Dynamo.
Hello?
Warren Jones?
Daniel, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing wonderful, my friend. Ladies and gentlemen, Warren Jones, a diehard Houston Dynamo supporter, and of course a very, very happy man, even though he still owes me a case of beer. But that's another story. Warren, my friend, I read the news. I reported the news. Just finally, the Houston Dynamo will be out of Robertson Stadium by April of 2012.
Praise God. it has been a long time coming. It's been a rough, tough slog for the last couple of years. You know, I think everything, going back 2-3 years ago, I think everything was on a good, stable, solid path. And then, of course, the financial collapse happened, and that put everything else on hold. And then as that was all sort of spinning and spinning out of control, then we had some politicians get involved, and those are just everything took probably twice as long as it should. But as of last week or a couple of weeks ago, it's all the T's aren't crossed and the I's dotted just yet, but everything that needs to be in place is in place, and it's been a long time coming.
Yes, it has, and like I've, you know, Warren, I mean, obviously Robertson Stadium is not a bad venue at all. Everyone, you know, who supports the Dynamo, they do fill the stadium. But, you know, to be honest, I mean, it's really not meant for the game at all. And finally, even though I understand in the report that the Southern Methodist University will be their football team will be using the stadium for, I guess, 5 or 6 home games a year, which is really not that bad. But, you know, this is your stadium.
Let me correct you on that, Daniel. It's not actually SMU. It's TSU, which is Texas Southern University.
I apologize then.
No problem. SMU's in Dallas. That'd be a little bit of a commute for them to.
You're right.
That was actually, you know, I mean, obviously, when it comes down to getting to landing a stadium, we all think in terms of soccer specific, you know, soccer only. And the harsh reality in today's environment, and even this kind of came to bear in Houston, and as Oliver Luck, I heard him numerous times explain this. It's you know, we want to start from the standpoint of building a stadium that only the team can play soccer in, and that would be great. You know, it would be wonderful if we could operate the way clubs do in Europe in that capacity. But the reality is, the economic reality is, and the political reality in many cases is that that you're going to have to find a way to meet somewhere in the middle. And one of the things that popped up kind of in the middle of the Dynamo Stadium process was the possibility of the other university kicking in a little bit of money and then also sharing the facility. And you know, if it gets the deal done, that's not the end of the world to me. You know, it could be far worse. If you're telling me that, okay, you've got to share a stadium, and then it's going to be out in the suburbs, and then now you've got to, you know, then you've also got to do different events and activities, and which they will still probably do as a result of AEG owning the club. But you know, when you start tagging a lot of extra baggage to the deal, then it becomes a little more unsavory, and I can't say that a lot of that has happened. I think overall, I think the fans and the team are happy with the deal. I think the city and finally the county, which is what the county was actually the vehicle that was dragging its feet the longest. I think everybody's got something down on paper now that we can live with and move on.
You know, obviously down in Texas, it's really a big NFL, American football.
No doubt.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, if you're going to work something like this into a deal, I mean, and it's only like, 5 or 6 home games a year. I mean, that's not that
right.
bad at all. And I mean, like I said before, most of the money will go to the Dynamo. And even though reading the report, there has been some, you know, opposition against it, which they think it's not going to benefit the community, which I believe they are misinformed, because it's not just the MLS season that you have to think about. You know, there's the Open Cup season, and at the same time, there's also the CONCACAF Champions League that the Dynamo have qualified for the last 2 years. So, and even Superliga. I have personally been against Superliga, but then again, if it helps, if it does help, you know, bringing in more fans to see the Dynamo play, then, you know, those naysayers will be proven wrong.
Well, I agree. A lot of the dissent against the Dynamo Stadium came from people who just frankly don't understand football. They don't understand them. They don't understand the season. They don't understand the multiple cups, the different competitions, the way that you can expand your income and how a stadium affects that, how commanding control over your schedule and maintaining your it's not a lot of the opposition here in Houston, and that was part of the grind. I think once the politicians got involved, I think it took a little while for some of them to kind of learn. It's not anything against them. I think that they were just, in many ways, kind of ignorant to how football works. They're just not f- football fans. And so that was, you know, leading them a little bit and tell, you know, when, if you come up and say, you know, the New York Giants need a brand new stadium for football, well, you know, all of a sudden, well, okay, everybody knows what you're talking about. They have some sense of what's involved there, what the income streams are going to be, what the benefits are going to be, what the taxes are going to be, the harmful things that might fall out of that. But when you talk about building a soccer stadium, there's a lot more education involved in how that can benefit the community. And the reality is, at the end of the day, it was a great deal for the city of Houston because AEG's kicking $60 million into a $95 million project. The city and the county are kicking in $10 million apiece for basically not for the stadium so much as for infrastructure improvements around the stadium, sewage and street. And then the additional benefits of that will come as, not to get too complicated, but the stadium will be located in what's called a tax, I think it's a tax investment reinforcement zone or something like that. What that essentially means is when the stadium goes in that zone, the taxes that are generated from that will stay within that zone. So in other words, if you don't build the stadium, you don't get any taxes out of the benefit from that. So in large measure, a lot of the opposition was, you know, just came from a side of a segment of the population that really just didn't understand the project or understand football in general. But it seems to have all come together.
Yeah, it really has. Yeah,
for the right time.
Thank God it's here.
You have no idea. We were just and to, you know, to its credit, Robertson, like you said, is really a nice stadium. I mean, it's really a wonderful football stadium in terms of its size, in terms of its sight lines. I kind of liken it to some of the smaller Premier League clubs. You know, like Portsmouth, for example. That Pompey Stadium in England is about the same size as Robertson, maybe even a little bit smaller. But a lot of the things, the problems with Robertson were, you know, we had pitch problems, which were not going to improve anytime soon. But the main problem was the fact that it's on a college campus. So when you have a team like the Dynamo, who are involved in not only their domestic league, but multiple cups and competitions, the Dynamo didn't really have full control over their scheduling. So we might play a CONCACAF, you know, a cup match. It may not be scheduled till 9 o'clock on a, you know, Wednesday night. Well, that makes it very difficult to draw people out on a school night on an event like that. And the reason it would be so late is because they had to accommodate the student population who were still in class going to night school at U of H.
Night school?
And so those are, there were a lot of logistical issues with Robertson that now will no longer be an issue. I think Oliver Luck deserves a lot of credit. There were a couple of instances kind of halfway through the process where people began saying, well, maybe we need to look at alternative locations. And I'll say this: Oliver Luck and the Dynamo, they held firm, and they said, no, we're really going to see this downtown stadium through until the last man standing. And you know, if and when the day comes where we need to look at an alternate, we will. But right now, and they did hold firm, and fortunately, it paid off, because I really would have the location of the stadium literally is in the shadows of the downtown skyline, and you can almost hit a golf ball and hit Minute Maid Park and Toyota Center, which is where the Astros and the Rockets play. So
yeah, exactly.
It's a perfect location.
Exactly. It's a very, very great location. Obviously, how is the public transportation? Will there be a train or a monorail, buses will be heading downtown?
Houston is very different than other cities, particularly northern cities where public transportation is available. Houston is much more like in L.A. where it's, I mean, you can drive 100 miles from one end of Houston to the other and still, you know, from suburb to suburb. So there probably will not be any, at least anytime soon, there probably won't be any real public transportation. But the thing about that is in that area of town, it'll kind of remain to be seen where how parking shakes out. There is parking down there right now. That part of town, which if you were looking at it on a map, is sort of would be in the southeast quadrant, just out on the outskirts of downtown. So there's actually parking that can be shared, I think, because it is so close to Minute Maid. There's parking there across the way. There's a lot of lots that you can walk from the stadium to the lot. From the lot to the stadium. I haven't heard a whole lot on what the plans are for parking, but I'm sure, with the Astros in a, I don't know, a 60,000-70,000 seat venue across the street managed, so I'm sure we'll be okay.
I bet you will. Finally, Warren, so far the Dynamo, they've got a couple of wins under their belts. You beat Salt Lake down a goal, and you got two penalty kicks, which is a rare thing. And then it's just foolish.
As the commentator said, a little home cooking, which I kind of disagree with. I mean, I saw two very obvious penalties there, but yeah, they've started off well. I try to make the point. You know, I have. Going into this season, we lost Ricardo Clark and Stuart Holden to Europe. So that's two pretty big cogs to pull right out of your, you know, right out of your spine, and have to replace. But Jeff Cameron, who was a standout, you know, all-star last year, they moved him to Stuart Holden's role. He's still kind of finding his feet. He scored his first goal of the year in their last match against Chivas. He looks much better. I think he's growing in confidence, and I have all the confidence in the world. You know, Jeff Cameron is like the Swiss Army knife of the Dynamo. He could play keeper, I think, and probably do as good a job as Pat Onstad, and that's not a knock on Pat Onstad. That's a compliment to Jeff Cameron. But he's moved into that Stuart Holden role. He's becoming he's getting used to the speed of that position as opposed to the center back that he played last year. Midfield actually more of an outside midfield is his more natural position. That's what he came to the Dynamo as. So he's more an even though he's garnered a lot of defensive honors for the Dynamo. That's been as a result of him stepping into a defensive role because of our, you know, tremendous injuries we had on the back line last year. And we've also brought in Lavelle. I mean, just recently in the last week or two, we've brought in Lavelle Palmer, Jamaican international, and we're bringing Joseph Nguyenia back from Europe, who they were thinking he was going to be able to slide in and play in the Chivas game, but he didn't get his paperwork in apparently. So I anticipate he'll be there this. He'll be there for selection this week. So it's a team that's still kind of finding its feet, but they've managed to plug some holes. And, you know, after losing two internationals, two critical internationals, I'd say they're doing as good or better than as expected. And a lot of credit for that certainly goes to Dominic Kinnear.
And once again, Dominic Kinnear, I think he knows his team very well, and he knows what to replace when you pull out two important cogs out of the machine. Warren
right.
Jones, thank you so much for joining me today. I'm very happy for you and Stacey Smith and, of course, Brian Zygo. Big I's dotted, T's crossed. I'm so happy for you. Thank you very much for joining me.
Well, we now both have something to celebrate when it comes to stadiums.
Exactly.
You guys have got yours, and it came a little sooner than ours, which kind of rubs me the wrong way. But that's
no.
All right.
Come on.
we can both enjoy them. Once ours goes up, we'll have to visit back and forth.
Yes, we definitely have to. Thanks again, Warren. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, Daniel.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Warren Jones, big-time Houston Dynamo supporter. Once again, very happy for him that he finally has his own stadium. The Dynamo have their own stadium going to be built and finished by April of 2012. And right now, it's on to the NASL segment. I got that wrong. I apologize. The North American Soccer League Second Division segment, as we're going to have Mr. Alex Hauter of the Minnesota Stars performing over at the National Sports Center in Minnesota. I'm going to get him on the air very soon. And as we are giving him a quick call, Minnesota with a victory over the Carolina Railhawks 1-0.
Hello, Alex.
Hello, Alex. This is Daniel Feuerstein from the show. How are you, sir?
Good, and you?
Very good. Thank you very much. Well, Mr. Hauter, it seems that your Minnesota Stars, you got a 1-0 victory over the Carolina Railhawks on the road over at Wake Med Soccer Park. How was the match?
Well, I think it went, I'd almost say, better than expected. Carolina's a good team, and we knew that we were going to have to control the midfield, and I think Manny did a really good job getting the guys ready for it. And it was really great to watch too, because you could really see the progress, especially from like the second half of the match that we played the week before against Vancouver.
Exactly. Now, speak about Mr. Lagos. Can you just please explain how did he just pull this team together in such a short period?
Well, the National Sports Center hosted a open tryout kind of in early March, and then I think Manny had a few players that he was scouting on his own before then. So we opened camp early March with a combination of those guys, and we were lucky enough to be able to have them all live together. And I think that's played a huge role, because in addition to practicing 2-a-days in preseason, you know, they had a chance to room together and to go out and, you know, explore the area together. And so there's been some really good friendships that have already formed among the guys that I think is a huge benefit to them, just because, you know, it's got them all on the same page really early, and they're all fighting for each other right away.
Now, the Lagos family is it's royalty up in Minnesota over there. Well, you're laughing now. Wait till he really lays it on you in training. No. But seriously, what is it mean to actually work with Manny and his family over there in Minnesota?
Well, I think it means a lot. Obviously, they had both Manny and his father Buzz have some legacy within the Thunder, the franchise that was here before us. And you know, they were names that Minnesotans and the fans here really recognize from the get-go. They know, and Manny especially, you know, been able to follow his career from you know, high school on up, all the way, you know, to the Olympics and some caps with the national team and time in MLS. So having him, I think, was, you know, a great opportunity for us to, you know, kind of work off the familiarity, I suppose, that we already had in terms of the fan base here.
No, it's absolutely fabulous. And I remember Manny Lagos when MLS got started in 96. He was part of the Metro Stars when the league got started. And I believe he scored a goal or two for us, I think, against DC. Yeah, it's just someone of Lagos' stature just being, you know, playing in MLS. And, of course, being a part of the new NASL is really something special. Talk about the facility, the National Soccer Center facility. You know, I understand it's one of the premier soccer-specific facilities in the country?
I would definitely say so. We have 52 fields over, I believe it's about 680 acres. In addition to the outdoor soccer fields, we also have an indoor soccer hall with a field turf field, as well as there's a golf course out there and an 8-rink ice arena that I believe is the largest set of ice under one roof in the world. So it truly is a multi-sport venue. We operate year-round, hosting tournaments for adults and youth alike.
Really? A giant
yes.
ice rink. Wow. Well, then, what the heck are the Minnesota Wild doing in St. Paul?
Well, build an arena for them and they will come, I
suppose. Exactly. That's what it is. Right. I should have known better. No. no, but that sounds very good. I guess you've guys been practice after training? If you're
what setups are you cut up?
I'm just saying golf as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the one of the staff benefits is a free pass onto the golf course. Yeah, so I know a lot of the players have been taking advantage of that. And,
yeah.
Especially, you know, we've been really lucky to get a really nice spring so far up here.
Yeah.
So.
Exactly. I know. Spring has been very kind to us over here on the Northeast as well. I understand that you have Mr. Johnny Menyonger, who returned to play for Minnesota. And what does that mean, you know, just to have a man like that, the entire supporters of the Minnesota Stars?
I think for the supporters it means a lot because, you know, again, it's a familiar face from the Thunder, and Johnny stood out with the Thunder. And, you know, he's also a great pickup, too, because he's brought a lot of experience to the guys, and we have a very young team here. But, you know, Johnny's a character, you know, on the field and off as well, and he's, I think, you know, well-deserving of the captain's armband that Manny's bestowed on him.
Schedule here after your first two matches. You're going to be traveling all the way down to Puerto Rico to play the Islanders. And
the guys are on their way down there right now.
I hope I'm not holding you up.
No. I'm actually the media coordinator for the team there. They're on their way down there.
They're on their way. Okay.
Right early this morning.
There we go. Yes. And then, of course, you've got two home matches in a row on the 24th. You'll be taking on FC Tampa Bay. Rhinos at home at NSC Stadium. How long have you been in the game, and were you around during the original NASL days?
No, I wasn't. That predates my birth, even. You know, I've been playing soccer since first or second grade, and then involved kind of in the front office role. I started with the Sports Center in mid-March, you know, kind of as the team was coming together. And then, you know, before that, I had spent a summer doing kind of a similar role for the Kansas City Wizards as an intern there.
And how was your time over with Kansas City?
Oh, it was a lot of fun. And it was kind of an exciting time to be down there because they were, you know, getting the stadium plans in place. And so it was there was a new ownership group too, so it was an exciting time to be down there.
Yes, it was. And, of course, just not to get away from being in the NASL, I understand the Wizards finally, the first beam of steel was accomplished. So that's always
yeah.
a good thing.
Yeah.
Obviously, you have some internationals as well. I believe you have Mr. Lewis Creighton, the keeper, and he was with DC United last year. I understand he had an injury. What type of injury?
He tore his ACL in stoppage time the first half of our game against Vancouver. So Lewis is done for the season, unfortunately.
Oh, that's a shame.
I don't know. I guess the injury bug strikes everybody, but
yeah.
It's unfortunate to see it happen to Lewis so early in the season. But Joe Warren, who, you know, he was with the Thunder as well and had retired for 3 years and came back, and he's stepped up and he's done a great job. And he definitely didn't look like he'd been out of the game for 3 years against Carolina last week.
Oh, that's absolutely fabulous. That's wonderful to hear an old hero deciding to relace the boots and get out there and do a job. I understand. Backup, I believe it's Joseph Pierce Warren?
Yes.
Yes. He's going to be an up-and-coming keeper in the future, or he's just filling the time?
Joe Warren is... I don't know that I'd say up and coming for the future because he's getting into his mid to late 30s. so he's resumed the starting role. His backup now is Matt Van Okel, who was actually with the Thunder last year. And Matt's a great guy. He went to Rutgers, and I believe this is his second year pro. And he'd been training with the team throughout the preseason. And after Lewis was injured, signed a contract with us, and so he's been kind of grafted into that backup role, and I think he's got a bright future with the team for sure.
Mm-hmm. Now, about Minnesota, I mean, what can you talk to us about the entire state of Minnesota, or at least where you are in Blaine? How big is soccer in one around the Great Lakes of our country?
I would say it's hugely popular, and that it's in many ways kind of an untapped hotspot for the game. Obviously with the Sports Center, it's the largest. I believe it is the largest soccer complex in the country. As well, it hosts the largest youth tournament in the Western Hemisphere, the Schwann's USA Cup, coming up here in July. That attracts teams all over. So, Minnesota as a destination is pretty well known among club teams. But just recently, two of the local clubs joined the, not the ODP program, but the kind of club version of that the USSF runs.
Mm-hmm.
I'm drawing a blank on the name.
Oh, that's all right.
But Shattuck St. Mary's, as well as, which is actually a school down in Faribault near here, and a club team from here in the Twin Cities itself.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a lot of talent. We have several local guys on our team. Brian Coleman and Andre Gosmanoff, both are Woodbury natives. So I think it's cool that we have a local connection as far as the players on the team go as well.
Just out of curiosity, have you seen any other athletes from the Minnesota Wild or the Minnesota Twins coming over for a visit? Like, obviously, you have Joe Maurer, the local, playing catcher for the Twins, or...
I have not. I understand right before I started, the Twins were doing some, preseason camps, youth camps, out at the Sports Center, taking advantage of the Sports Hall. But I wasn't lucky enough to overlap them at all. So, No other big names have crossed my path yet, but
okay.
You
will let us know.
At the Sports Center. Yes, of course.
And finally, what season are you expecting the Thunder to have, at least in the Open Cup, or getting far into the new Division II league playoffs?
I think it's hard to know at this point for the Stars because, like I said, we've played two games. I think if you ask that question to Manny, he'll tell you that he's expecting some ups and downs, because we've had, a month to kind of get the team together and get organized. But I think one thing that we're all optimistic about is that we'll be able to watch them progress as the year goes by. And I think that the product that's on the field now is not as good as the product that'll be on the field 3 months from now. And I think just with kind of the hierarchy of the league in terms of the power that Carolina and Portland, Vancouver have in terms of, recruiting top-notch talent, I think they'll be challenging for those top four spots. And kind of the rest of us will be battling for the last four. And I think that, if we get in, anything can happen from there.
Well, Mr. Hauser, thank you very much for your time. I am very glad you came on the show. Good luck this year with Minnesota Stars, and hopefully success in the future.
All right. Thank you for having me.
No problem. Take care, sir. That was Mr. Alex Hauser of the Minnesota Stars. And, of course, the Stars are already down in Puerto Rico getting ready for some sun, fun, and football. And now, a good friend of mine that I've bantered about all the time. Yes, he's from New England. Yes, he's a pain in the rear end. But you know what? He's a good man, and I always enjoy talking to him. It is Mr. Hank Alexander on right now.
Hi, this is Hank. You've reached my voicemail.
Oops. It looks like Hank is not ready to join us.
Can. Thanks so much.
Hank, it's Dan. I'm waiting for you to come on the show. Please give me a call. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it looks like Mr. Alexander is not available at the moment. Hopefully soon. Obviously, the Revolution are off to a decent start this year. Two wins and two losses. And here we go. I believe we just received a new number to give him a call at. So Hank is ready. Hank is available. Probably wasn't available. We'll find out.
Hi, this is Hank. You've reached my voicemail.
And once again, we have Hank's voicemail. Don't understand why that has happened. He says he was available to come on, and we have the time set up. We're going to try and do something else. We are going to try and send him... that he can understand. You know how these Boston people are. There's no idea why they're not picking up. But hopefully we're going to have him on. We're going to try again. Hopefully we'll have him on. We'll talk some Revolution for you guys. And I have to give Mr. Alexander the if he's going to come on or not. But as we all know, the Revolution are managed by Mr. Steve Nicol, legend of Liverpool Football Club in England. And once again, it doesn't matter how many players he loses, he always finds a way to get...
Hi, this is Hank. You've reached my voicemail, so please leave your name
and
number.
Once again, one second, ladies and gentlemen, as I'll be right back. We have Mr. Alexander available, ladies and gentlemen. Just at the moment, we're having problems with the phone line. Three. Having a bit of a problem, ladies and gentlemen, but hopefully... we'll get him on. Hopefully we'll have him on here soon. Hopefully things will be fine. Hank is trying to get on. We're having some phone issues here. And hopefully Hank Alexander will be coming on with us very shortly. Hank, are you there? Hank, are you there? Are you there, sir? Hank, are you there?
Daniel.
Yes. Oh, there we go.
How are you?
I'm doing great, Hank. You know, I'm trying to. This is the first phone issue I've had. This is unbelievable.
Can we swear on this show? Is this an R-rated show? I mean,
No. We're going to have to keep it clean, unfortunately.
Let's keep it clean, then. And you and I can share sentiments later, my friend.
Yes, but, sir. Well, Hank, thank you very much for coming on the show. I'm very glad you're able to come on and talk about the Revolution with us. So far, you've got 6 points in 4 matches. You've done well on the road at D.C., and I believe you did well at home as well against Toronto FC. Talk about Mr. Jack Schalowski.
Mr. Zach Schalowski, boy, what a find, again, through the Nickel Scouting program, you know, the ACC pipeline that he seems to have. He loves the boys from Wake Forest, and this is yet another example of that. He was a big-time goal scorer in college. You may remember he scored the game-winning goal, I think, 2 years ago in the NCAA final. And, you know, we could see early in preseason that he was going to get a lot of minutes. And sure enough, he's played just about every game. He has been subbed off twice in two of his appearances. But, boy, what a home opener for that boy. He really came alive in the second half and just really sparked the whole offense into high gear.
Yeah, I mean, it's just an amazing story. You know, I have said repeatedly, you know, whatever foreign coach comes to MLS, and we're not talking about foreign players that become coaches after their playing career is done. You know, Steve Nickel is basically.
You still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. Are you there?
Yep, you just cut out a little bit. Go ahead.
I'm sorry about that. No, I'm just saying Steve Nickel, you know, he's just a gem for MLS when it comes to the foreign coaching roles because he never played in MLS and then became a coach. I mean, he just came over. He assisted that 1 year with Zanga as head coach. He went to the old Boston Bulldogs when they were D3 and then PDL. And then when Clavijo was sacked, he took over all the time, all over, and he's done a fantastic job.
Yeah, he's real, you know, he came around the same way that Paul Mariner did, actually. Just, you know, came over and started working in some colleges, you know, doing the assistant route. And he's done a fantastic job, like you said. I mean, he's right now the longest tenured coach in MLS, and that's saying something on its own. So you really can't go wrong with a guy like that. And, you know, he seems to have picked yet another strong crop of candidates for the Revolution this year. The other big signing, rookie defender Seth Stanovic, who's played, you know, fantastically and was on pace to at least meet Darius Barnes' record of last year, playing every minute of every game until he was subbed off in the last game. Questionable substitution in my mind, but, you know, again, we're talking about Steve Nickel, so there's only so much you can question it.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, and then we've got this new guy, Marko Perovic, who just came in from FC Basel in Switzerland, where he's a Serbian midfielder and likes to attack the ball quite a bit. So hopefully, you know, these guys will be, you know, we'll be talking about them for the rest of the season in a favorable light.
Now, obviously, going through the whole CBA with the league and the players' union, unfortunately, Steve Ralston is no longer with the club. He is down with AC St. Louis in the North American Soccer League. Do you think he's already been missed, and or maybe these new recruits have erased the misery?
Well, I mean, there's only so much you can replace a guy like Steve Ralston with, because he brought so much more to the team than just his presence on the field. You know, without him on the field and without Taylor Twellman on the field, we still found a way to win through Shalrie Joseph, and we relied heavily on him to get us into the playoffs. But, you know, with Steve Ralston on the field, you had that extra element there because he really turned into kind of a finesse player in his later years. You know, quality control on his crosses as well as his just field management, if you will. Plus, he took up the role as kind of a pseudo player coach, even in New England, when, you know, we had these new kids like Kenny Mansalli and Sandy Nyasi, who were out on the field, and you know, they had never played in the United States or at a pro level before, And he really just kind of took them under his wing and showed a lot of leadership there. So I think from the team standpoint, it's leadership that we miss the most. And, you know, it's just the nicest guy on the planet. And, you know, you talked to him a couple weeks ago, Daniel, and he is just a genuine guy, genuine character, leaves it all out on the field, and that's what the fans are going to miss. You know, in terms of production on the field, I think, you know, this early in the season, there's still so many, you know, questions as to how this team is going to gel together. I mean, we had just inserted a new midfielder in Marko Perovic, like I said, you know, his first full game with the team last week. He did well to win the ball, but, you know, still not fully gelling with the other teammates there, and there seems to be there was a real lack of link-up play from the midfield and the forwards, like we saw against Toronto FC. I think you can attribute that to Shari Joseph not being in the lineup, but at the same time, you had, you know, 10 other players that were on the field the week before, nine other players without Shari Joseph, and that should at least, you know, carry over from week to week. So it remains to be seen how this team is actually going to gel together in these kind of situations. But we have high hopes.
Yeah, it definitely does. Now, obviously, Hank, there's been some talking or some hoping from your fellow supporters about maybe the Revolution getting out of Gillette and actually playing in your own stadium, either or somewhere near the Foxborough area by Gillette Stadium. And apparently the front office has said that you don't need a new stadium. You have a good time in Gillette Stadium. I mean, what do you say about that?
Well, I mean, the front office's policy is pretty much, you know, the same from place to place, you know, wherever you read the story. You know, they are committed to getting a soccer-specific stadium, but only if it's the right fit for the right place. I mean, they don't want to go move into a soccer-specific stadium if they can't draw more than 15 to 18,000 fans per game. That being said, they're not doing that now in Foxborough. They're averaging more like 12 to 15, and that's being generous, I think. You know, and to be honest, I really don't think until the Kraft family, who've just invested, you know, substantial money into building a new development around the existing Gillette Stadium called Patriot Place, which is a state-of-the-art, top-of-the-line shopping center where you get everything from, you know, Bar Louie to, you know, Victoria's Secret to, you know, whatever, any fancy, you know, shopping mall, you know, towards like Galleria Mall kind of place would be. That's what they're trying to do at Patriot Place. And so they're going to capitalize on that investment by keeping the Revolution there as long as they can. I mean, as long as they get people coming there, there's a chance that they're going to be able to pay down the investment they made on that place. And until they, you know, get to a point where they're at a break-even point or better, I don't see them getting out of Gillette Stadium. I don't see any incentive for them to do so whatsoever. The league isn't going to force them to get out, I don't think, because the league, you know, doesn't pay rent to Robert Kraft and Gillette Stadium. They are free ride. You know, it's not like they're at RFK and the building's falling down around them and they have to pay rent every year. It's a completely different scenario. So they're going to be there for the foreseeable future. I don't see any reason why they're going to leave.
Mm-hmm.
I would love it. Hey, I'm sitting here on Boston Harbor looking out over this beautiful view, and there's construction going on all around me right here. And, you know, a stadium would look great right here, just perfect. And it's not going to happen. It'll never happen here. Maybe in Somerville there's some idea that will happen down there because there's a project going on down there, an expansion project for the Green Line, which is our local subway, the T. The Green Line is going to extend out into that area a bit further, and there may be an opportunity to leverage some of that and build the stadium on top of that kind of Green Line area. And that would be great, too, because Somerville is a is local. It's accessible by a lot of people. It's accessible by public transportation, which is something we don't have at Foxborough. And there's a huge Brazilian/Portuguese population in the Somerville area. And Somerville's right between Cambridge and Charlestown, for those people that don't know where Somerville is. It's just on the other side of the channel from the garden, really. It's a 5-minute drive from the Fleet Center, where the TD Bank North Garden, as it's called now, the old Boston Garden. There's a possibility that might still happen. That was the one that had the most legs. There's other sites around that I could potentially see them building at, that the old Bayside Expo Center seems to be falling apart, and they could maybe use an investment. Maybe that's a place where the crafts could, capitalize on, maybe getting a smart purchase in with the economy being bad as it is, and then building out that area. It's right next to Boston University, right off the Red Line, which is also on the, so who knows? I mean,
right.
There's lots of opportunity, but like I said, until the crafts feel comfortable that they're, that it's a win-win situation from both a financial standpoint and that it's, and that they're going to be able to fill it, that they're going to have the fan support to fill it, then I don't see them moving anytime soon.
So basically what they want is a Hartford Civic Center type of thing, right?
I don't know about that, man.
Oh, well, you know what I mean, like a mall connected to a sporting event or a...
Yeah, I mean, that's what they've got now. That's what they've got at Gillette. And it's impressive. I have to say, I mean, they built it out in just under a year. It looks fantastic. And, the Revs get free parking down there. Not a lot of people realize that, because when you go down there for a Patriots game, they charge $50 to park there. But the Revs get to park there for free. You get access, obviously, to the whole mall, so you can go get a bite to eat or whatever. It's a fantastic venue if you get down there. It's just, nobody gets down there because they, assume that it's going to be expensive. A ticket's $20 and free parking. That's a cheap date in my book. if you do it right, you go get dinner there early at one of the nicer restaurants. Maybe if you're with a special someone or if you're with the kids, you can take them to Red Robin or whatever that place is. And then you go afterwards. There's the CBS scene where the players and the Rev girls hang out. So you can go hang out with the Rev girls if you want.
You're married, Hank. You're married.
I know.
finally, Hank. I think it's a pretty good start for the Revolution for this brand new season. Do you feel they're going to make the playoffs again this year, or?
Yeah,
maybe?
I think. Well, obviously, this year it's going to be a little tougher. We're up to what, 16 teams. There's it's a larger field, but I think eventually it'll all come together, and we should qualify. We had some other big off-season losses other than Steve Ralston. We lost Jeff Lorenowitz as well, which was huge. But he's coming back this weekend along with Wells Thompson in the Colorado Rapids. So we're looking forward to seeing those two guys back out on the field, despite the fact that they're going to be wearing baby powder blue or something weird like that, whatever colors they have. But then we had, we have a lot of great players still. If Shaw Reed gets healthy and if Taylor Twellman ever gets back, which, is a hit or miss scenario, they're going to be strong. They're going to be strong through the end. And so it's just a matter of making sure we've got a healthy, really the key right now for us is a healthy Shaw Reed Joseph. And I think he's the real key that will help, link the ball straight down the middle, the spine of the team, so to speak. And he'll be the catalyst for the attack going forward.
Well, Hank, thanks for joining me. Sorry about the whole phone issue. Hopefully, we'll get that thing cleared up.
So. And Daniel, anytime, it was fun.
Thanks a lot, Hank. I'll hope to talk to you soon. And anytime you need me on your Midnight Rev podcast, you let me know.
All right, buddy. Talk to you soon.
All right. Talk to you later. Thanks a lot, ladies and gentlemen. That was Mr. Hank Alexander. I apologize for the problems with the phone line. got it corrected, and hopefully that won't happen again. But other than that, thank you very much for missing. And with the remaining time, it is Red Bull New York time. This is the New York Red Bull segment. The start of the match against FC Dallas was terrible. They looked flat and uninspired. Already you thought that it could be a repeat of what happened last week at Chivas USA. You have to give credit to FC Dallas because they came out like gangbusters wanting to steal the full 3 points at their first visit to Red Bull Arena. That 10th-minute goal by Dax McCarty was placed beautifully from his head and a great possible. Somehow, after that goal was scored, the Red Bulls just woke up. They snapped into it and decided to finally play some real football and just countered every single attack that FC Dallas gave them. 22nd minute, it looked like Juan Pablo Angel finally broke through for his first goal, but the offside flag went up. Taking a look at the replay, it was a very tough call as the left back on the far side did look like he kept Angel on. But I have to be honest, everyone, Angel was at least a half step off when the pass was made. FC Dallas looked like they were bunkering all half and tried to weather the storm as RBNY was hunting for the equalizer. Second half started, and yes, ladies and gentlemen, it was definitely time. FC Dallas revved up their engines, and they wanted to add on to their lone tally. Wave after wave of attacking runs for goal number two, but Kondul made tons of diving saves, punching saves, and had some good fortune as the ball would hit the posts. Finally, a goal would come to the Red Bulls, but before, it was a fantastic save by Kondul on David Ferreira as he got both paws on the ball and it deflected off the post and away. Then Jolyn Pear attacked down the field. When he got inside the area, he crossed the ball to Angel, and a quick right-footed strike would equalize the match and the first goal of the season for Angel. A spot came to the Red Bulls when 64th minute. Angel was ready to take. He shot it low. Dario Sala dove to his right to make the save, and the score was still leveled at one apiece. As the match was approaching the 90th minute, there was a feeling that there was a second goal coming and it could be dramatic. Lisa Ubiparapovic went after the ball on the line and just inside the Dallas area. Daniel Hernandez made the tackle where it took Alex Proust some time to make a firm decision to issue a second penalty for RBNY. After consulting with his nearside assistant, Proust walks towards the spot, points at it firmly, and it would be a second chance for RBNY to take the lead. Angel would take the penalty again, and this time he would roof it to the upper 90 in the right corner. A big comeback win for RBNY as they secured the 3 points and 9 points out of 4 matches to be top of the East and second on the league table from the Los Angeles Galaxy, who are on top with 12 and undefeated. This type of match, RBNY would have lost if we were back in 2009. You have to give FC Dallas credit. They never backed down, and they were also playing. This was a gutsy and gritty win when the club had a very poor and pathetic start to the match, and nicely woke up after the first 15 minutes after they gave up the goal. Now it's time for an Philadelphia Union, and if RBNY are smart, they should not take them lightly. If you saw the dangerous Sebastian Letoux get a hat trick against DC United, then it will be a long afternoon with Mike Petke and Tim Ream trying to defend him all match long. 4 p.m. start time, and if you can't make the match, MSG Network, along with Steve DeCangelosi, Shep Messing, and Tina Servasio, will have the action covered on MSG Network. If you are a big supporter of Red Bull New York and you hop on the PATH train or drive down to Hoboken, the premier soccer shop located at 157 First Street, and get want to get Juan Pablo Angel, Dane Richards, Mike Petke, and newcomers like Jolyn Pear, rookie Tim Ream. They have the official numbers and letters from Major League Soccer to put on the backs of the jerseys. Call the shop at 201-533-8900 or go online at www.premsoccershop.com. They are on Twitter and Facebook as well. And now, ladies and gentlemen, without any further ado, head coach Hans and his post-match press conference.
I'll make a brief statement about the match.
Oh, rather easy. We started very, very poor the first 10, 15 minutes. We looked totally paralyzed. It was just a matter of time before they were going to score the first goal. And after 10, 15 or 15 minutes, I think we responded rather well. The way we played, we break the lines. But it was in a way more about the effort. I don't know if we were nervous the first 10, 15 minutes after losing against Chivas and then playing at home, because it didn't look like a normal team. And to be honest, I don't know how it's possible to win a football game like this with all the chances Dallas had. But I've been on the other side, so I take the 3 points. I'm happy with that.
We'll start with Christian and back.
Earlier this week, you said you wanted to see how the team responded after that first loss to Chivas. Any thoughts on how this team responded?
Yeah, we didn't respond well the first 10, 15 minutes. We looked totally paralyzed. And I don't know really why. We have to start better every game in a way, because being one down, you know, it's about 75% probably of teams with one up in the game. But we recover well, and that's a good sign. But to be honest, the Bona kept us in the game. 5-6 key saves. I think they had two finishing at the bar, one at the post. So we could easily have lost this game too.
Michael.
After Juan Pablo Angel missed his first PK, did you have any second thoughts about him attempting the second one so late in the match?
No, I don't think so. In a way, he looked confident and just went for the penalty spot. So it was no thoughts about getting another player for the penalty. Yeah, he rebounded well, I must say. He was absolutely top class today. His saves on the line, deflecting shots, it was absolute. You can't do it better in a way.
Frank.
Coach, was there more constant effort this week in practice via Juan Pablo and Bob New York?
Yeah, we have worked a lot with attacking games. To be honest, also against Chicago and Seattle, if you look at the stats in a way, we have the same number chances as Chicago and Seattle. So we haven't all the time just working with the defense, but it has been the target because of the conceded 41 goals last season. But we have worked with attacking game, and Juan Pablo has looked more sharper, more mobile the last week.
Adj.
Yeah, he, in a way, he looked, if I could say, a little bit tired in a way. I don't know why. He hasn't been playing for a couple of months at least, and he definitely needs time to play games to get in a better shape.
Did you feel that right away, as the game went on, did you feel like you really need those players that are coming in? Considering your offensive options on the
bench? Yeah, we need pace up front, definitely. We have two strikers now, both coming short in a way, and no pace in behind. It's only Dane on the wide right who has pace. So I think if everything goes well with Rodgers and he gets this appointment and visa, he has a lot of pace up front. The same with the Danish guy on the left-hand side. There's a lot of pace, but a very good technical player too.
Dylan here.
You talk about
Sinisa?
Yeah.
The way he...
Like, just, you know, what you thought of him when he came on?
Now, the thoughts to... We were going to switch Dane a little bit earlier because the game, we didn't control anything in midfield. It just went from end line. It looked like a basketball game in a way, and a lot of chances. And I would like to see a more controlled team, more controlled midfield. When we won the ball, it was just, in a way, a killer pass from the back four, and that's, in a way, suicide. We couldn't keep the ball in the team.
Last few questions first in the back.
Yeah, do you think that changing Sinisa for any reason changed the course of the game?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. In a way, it was too short time of the game to play, but he is more, in a way, you know, central midfield player who can keep the ball, get hold of the ball, so perhaps that changed a little bit, but not that much.
Last question, Jack here.
What do you see Nielsen for who and where?
Brian Nielsen. Wide left. But he's been playing also as a second striker, and I think when you play away perhaps against the big teams, and you probably perhaps need to defend a little bit more, for example, play Galaxy away, he's a second striker with a lot of pace and very good on the ball, so he can play second striker or wide left.
And who goes to that?
Probably one of the strikers.
Thank you. The Rebels locker room, the open.
And that was the post-match press conference from Red Bull New York head coach Hans Bacca. And obviously he was not pleased with the first 15 minutes of the match, but finally his side was able to get through. And, you know, like I said before, it was a really strange match. For those of you that were complaining maybe about what the heck was going on, yes, if I saw it myself, Joe Linpear was not at all visible. I felt that either he was defending too much or he wasn't getting many touches on the ball to bring it up and to give service. So, but obviously after the goal and after they finally woke up, you know, the club, after the first goal scored by Dallas, they finally woke up and everything was just fine. Obviously the man of the match, you could say, was Juan Pablo Arnal with the two goals. Obviously it was Buna Kondul, in all match long, goal that they gave up. And here is Buna Kondul. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, it was Buna time in a big way.
This is a hot spot.
Nothing happens, you know. You get almost man of the match there. But to rebound from last week, the tough goal that you gave up, you had to feel really happy just with your performance and obviously to get the 3 points.
Well, it is. Me, since last game, when it was over, I mean, when we went to Chivas, as soon as the game was over, it's over. Mistakes happen. If you don't want to play, if you don't want to make mistakes, don't play the game. So I'm not worrying about that. So this is a game that we needed to rebound and keep the momentum and the spirit of the team going. So we just needed to win. It doesn't matter anyway, ugly or pretty. So come up with a W means a lot for the team.
And how ugly was this game? Or
well, it was very open, especially when it was 1-1 the end of the beginning of the second half. You see a lot of counter attacks and stuff. So they got a couple of good chances they missed, and we were lucky to get two penalty kicks. So it could have gone anyway, so luckily ended up our way. So that's the way things go.
You were tested right from the start. I mean, they just attacked you guys immediately, and you had to come up with some pretty early saves.
Well, because they believe that they can, since, you know, we lost last week, they believe, you know, our spirit and maybe down, so they want to put pressure. And, you know, when they do that, the first 15 minutes, they got a goal, and they think that, hey, at least we can come over here and get a point. But us, it was totally different. We needed this win big for the fans, for ourselves, and, you know, to keep a good start of the season going.
Are these the kind of games goalies like, with a lot of action, or do you like to just sit back and
well,
too much going on?
It doesn't matter. You know, me, I just want to help my team whenever they need me. And also the team help me whenever I need them. The fact that everybody pinching, everybody believe me from start to the beginning, we work hard to get a 3 points, that's all you want.
Are you sharper when you're busy?
Yeah, kind of, because when you're busy, you know, because if you're not really busy, you may lose focus and all those stuff, and one thing comes and goes in. But the fact that, you know, challenge after challenge, challenge after challenge, and also that the energy that comes from the goalie goes through the team and say, hey, the goalie kept us, and let's, you know, try to pull through, and that's where they end up doing it.
When you make some of those saves, is that when the help from the post also comes in? You know, like you always hear about you make your own luck. I mean, when you're playing well, mm-hmm. do those things go in your favor?
Well, they say it's magic or luck or anything. Hey, sometimes goalies save the ball with their face, thumbs, or anything part of the body that you don't want the ball to hit. But hey, I'm a goalie. I would save any way with part of my body. So the post is part of the goalie. So if I touch it, hit the post, get back to me. Hey. Good luck for me. If I touch it, hit the post, they went back, and hey, too bad. It happens.
Back four played really well in front of you. How well have you connected with them through the first 4 games?
Well, communication is the main thing. I've been with Mike since 2005, so we know each other pretty well. Tim, looks like somebody who's been in this league for a long time. Roy Miller, tons of experience. Jeremy, excellent. So the fact that we all know what we have to do and we've been working it since February and things are clicking the way we want it to be. So let's just keep up the good work we've been doing.
What do you think about the crowd tonight? Considerably less than the first two matches here.
Excellent. Because, you know, when we were down, they didn't give up. You know, they gave up the hopes and belief and stop. Keep chanting Red Bull, let's go, let's go, let's go. You know, once you have the crowd behind you, pushing you, you know, all you need to do, just me, I play with pride. And this team play with pride. Because we got family, kids, and everyone yelling, winning, want us to win. So, you know, when you have the crowd behind you, you're going to do a lot more than you're capable of doing.
But in terms of numbers, it was less than the 24,000, 25,000 first two games.
Well, you know, it depends. Sometimes, you know, when you look at the forecast, you know, the weather say maybe sprinkling a little bit of rain and stuff. Some people doesn't like to get wet. They think they're going to melt. But hey, at least, you know, we got more than 15,000 and up. To me, that's kind of good. You know, when you have the 25,000 and you got 15,000, close to 20,000, that looks really good.
And that was Buna Kondul, keeper of the Red Bulls. And he did a fantastic job out there after they gave up that first goal. So once again, Buna Kondul was, in my mind, man of the match. And, of course, we have audio from Juan Pablo Angel, who finally got his first two goals of the season. Could have had four. Stopped by Salah. And his first goal of the match should have been one in the 22nd minute, but was pulled back for offsides. Juan. Trying to get it up. Juan Pablo Angel.
Do you have any second thoughts about that?
No, I mean, I honestly think that, you know, the first one, every time you miss a penalty is a bad penalty, but I think, you know, I hit it right, he gambled, and he saved it. And then the second one, you know, it's not easy just to take it, especially that far into the game. It was obviously that last opportunity for us to win the game, and I was relieved to put it away.
Given the start to the season and, you know, missing that first penalty, how gratifying was it to bury that shot?
No, I mean, I was gratified because it means the 3 points for us. I talked to you last week, and you asked me if I was struggling, and I said that I'm full of confidence in what I can do. And if the chances or the ball gets into the box, I know that I capable enough to put some of them away. And today was, you know, without creating much, we managed to win a very difficult game for us.
How big was Buna today?
Scoring the first goal.
Sorry?
How were we?
I was relieved. I mean, to be honest with you, I've been saying it all along. I'd rather as a striker miss the chances than not having them. And I didn't really have much, you know, at the beginning of the year in the first 2-3 games. And today, I am, you know, pretty, I don't know, I mean, I think the goal that they was disallowing the first half, I was onside. I might be absolutely wrong, but I thought that it was onside. The second one, you know, when he came on, when the ball came, I felt full of confidence that I was going to put it away. And in penalty, when it was a little bit short.
Talk about Buna today, how big he was.
He was by far the man of the match. He made some impressive saves for us, and, you know, I'm delighted for him, just the way he bounced back. But in general, it was a very difficult game for us, and today was only about the result. And you know, sometimes you play well and you don't get results, and today we play not as good as we would have wanted it to, but we managed to get the 3 points.
Are there four matches?
I think it's a phenomenal start for us, but there's still a lot of work to be done, especially in the final third. There's no secret, but we still, you know, need to do better offensively, creating chances and the movement, and, you know, but I always say that it's easy to correct things when you're winning, and it gives us confidence, and we got to keep working, you know, every week to try to improve in the areas that we need to.
You can find a way to win a match like this,
it's
20 chances or anything like that. Are you more industrious or maybe more resilient?
It's phenomenal. We went through a process last year that, you know, even, you know, playing well, we couldn't get a result. And today is one of those ugly games that, you know, you take the victory no matter how. And as I say, after a very difficult game against Chivas, we came back. And I think, you know, as I said, it's important to get the 3 points, and we did it. And so Now we've got another week to build up.
This kind of game you would have lost last year.
Oh, definitely. No doubt about it. No doubt about it. So I'll take it. You know, as I say, you know, there wasn't much in the game for us. I think they probably, you know, were the better team in terms of possession. And they have, you know, more chances than we did. But we ended up winning the game. We put the few chances that we had away, and we won.
When you take that second PK, are you reacting off the first one, or do you see something in him where you went the other way high?
No, I just, you know, I before I take the penalties, I always know the side that I'm going to, you know, hit it. And I just wanted it to change it and put it, you know, as high as I could. Fortunately enough, I hit it pretty well, and I scored.
Is there any mind games going on? Because he dove the same way.
I mean, it's not easy, to be honest with you, to take the second penalty when you know that you missed the first one, and you get into the 90th minute, and it's the last chance. So the expectation was high. You could tell that, you know, it was a lot of, you know, expectation, and you could feel, you know, the energy. But as I said, I was relieved. I know what are my responsibilities, and I am delighted because of the 3 points.
You think Sally cheated a little bit on your first penalty attempt?
I think it was a good, I will say it was a bad penalty.
it's only 4 games, but first place. 4 games.
Yeah, this, as I say, there's still a little work to be done. We got to go game by game, and keep building on it. This is giving us, you know, massive confidence for us, because winning a game like this, you know, you're only going to do as well, and it's only going to do as good for us. So we got to keep improving. We know that we need to work in a lot of, you know, areas, but, you know, top of the league right now.
And you had a chance to celebrate with the crowd actually in your
face. Oh, yeah, so phenomenal. I mean, you know, score, you know, for the first time in front of them, and ended up, you know, scoring the winning goal, you know, at the arena. You know, it's important to open up your scoring charts in the season, and I'm delighted.
Your brace is halfway to 100 in the league goals.
All right. It's a long way to go. But, you know, I'll take, you know, every game, as I say. I know my responsibilities. I'm happy that I score again. But as I say, I always will give my performances away or my goals away for the team. And if we end up, you know, winning games and I don't get to score goals, I'll take it.
And that was Juan Pablo Angel discussing how relieved he was that he finally got one, or at least got two, into the net. And he is the ultimate professional. Even, you know, I understand he's a team player, that all he cares about is winning for the team, and that is definitely admirable. But, you know, I mean, I know he doesn't like to be talked about himself, but, you know, I try to, because I want him to understand that you guys, how you feel about Juan Pablo Angel, and obviously he shows it on the field. You like to see a little more humility, I guess. But you know what? It's a good thing that Juan Pablo Angel is on this club, and he is doing a fabulous job so far. And I still contend that the tackle on the Guzman has slowed him with his goal tallies than it really is his age. Next up, one of the new signings of the club, Salim, coming over from Belgium. And here are his thoughts on the match and being in the league for his first start of the season.
It wasn't easy, but it's positive. It shows how strong we are in the head. Because the first 10 minutes in the first half, we were totally not in the game. Towards the end of the first half, we came back. And the second half, the head coach told us, yeah, we're not in the game, so we have to come out the second half as winners. Like, we have the mentality that we want to win the game. And that's exactly what we did in that end. It paid off.
What happened in that in the very beginning of the game?
That's what I mean. It's football. It happens sometimes. You know, you don't know what happened. We came in the game. Of course, we wanted to win. But, I mean, we came in the first 10 minutes. We were just numb. We were nowhere to be found. And, I mean, we came back, but it wasn't enough. And the second half, I think we did good to come back in the game again.
Did you feel that Dallas, after they got their goal in the 10th minute, like they were bunkering down at all?
Well, I mean, like I said before, in the first half, we weren't good enough. They had all the possessions. And they scored the goal. But we came back, like I said. But in the second half, I think we did well. We put them under pressure, and we got the goals. And I think at the end, it could go either ways. But we're happy to get the 3 points.
After coming off the bench last week against Chivas in the first start in the league, what's your opinions of this league right now?
I think people who are outside the league, like in Europe, they always say that the league in the States is weak. But I mean, if they got here, they would get to know that it's very strong. You know, it's very physical, just like in Germany, a little bit same style. So I think for me, I'm a little bit surprised that the league is so good. But it's all positive. I'm glad to be here.
And that is Mr. Salou Ibrahim, not the other way around. Obviously, it was in a little error. Just to give everyone an update from training this afternoon over at Montclair, from Michael Lewis of the New York Daily News and, of course, of Big Apple Soccer, Makumba Kanji is to undergo scan for a right foot injury. He left training with crutches. He took a knock on his right foot. He's been scheduled to take a scan on his right foot today, this afternoon. No one knows if he'll be available for the afternoon tilt against Philadelphia Union this coming Saturday at 4 o'clock. Kanji cannot play. There will be another interesting option available, and that is the man on loan coming over from Denmark, Danish left-sided midfielder Brian Nielsen. He's supposed to be flying in tomorrow night from Denmark, and hopefully he will be used right away Saturday afternoon, as he is one of the high-profile players coming over from loan, scouted by Eric Soler, the sporting director and general manager. So that is from Brian Lewis of the New York Daily News and of BigAppleSoccer.com. And finally, we have Mr. Dane Richards, who picked up two big hits. Unfortunately, he got kneed into the stomach at the end of the first half by Daniel Hernandez, and then it was Mr. Ferreira who swiped him on Dane Richards' leg. So here's Mr. Richards on what happened with him.
5 minutes, the game would be over.
Okay.
Maybe it would be booed out of the Giant Stadium already.
Right.
But we managed to come back, and we can't believe we win this game, but we won, so we just take the 3 points in the final.
You took a big hit at the end of the first half from Daniel Hernandez. What, did you get hit in the face, or was it a knee to the stomach?
Yeah, he followed through with his knee right into my rib. Ooh. I know he's killing me, but I'm just going to ice it later.
And then you took a swipe at the other end from...
Yeah, that guy was talking crap all game, but it's okay. I get it every game, so just got to play.
But you feel the team came up strong after the first 10 minutes of the match?
We're still giving them chances. I wouldn't say strong, but we're attacking. But sometimes the cross is short or the passes, the reaches, they create counter attacks for them and chances for them. But Buna kept us in the game, trust me. So we managed to win.
That's not going to be something to keep you
out. That was Dane Richards giving credit to Buna Kandul, keeping the Red Bulls in the match. And of course, it is a good start. 9 points in 4 matches, obviously. And, you know, for the Red Bulls, second place league-wide, LA Galaxy leading the entire league with 12 points. They finally gave up a goal, and all 7 goals for Los Angeles is by Mr. Edson Buttle, who has resurrected his career and has looked fabulous, and hopefully he'll be given the U.S. national team spot. But the Red Bulls, ladies and gentlemen, you probably already know this, but I'd like to announce it anyway. Sunday afternoon, 1 o'clock, Red Bull Arena on May 23rd, the day after the UEFA Champions League final. Juventus from Serie A will be playing an exhibition match at Red Bull Arena against your New York Red Bulls. And it's going to be a fabulous time once again in Harrison, New Jersey, an early afternoon start. And I personally cannot wait seeing Red Bull Arena filled with when Santos FC of Brazil came over. That was just absolutely fantastic, a great atmosphere. a sold-out, nearly sold-out Red Bull Arena against Chicago Fire. A little over 24,000. A little around 13,000-plus against FC Dallas. Ladies and gentlemen, for those of you that were not able to make the match or whatever, you know, guys, this stadium was built for us. Supporters of the club, the media for the club, and I'm have to tell you guys, you got to come. You got to fill it up. You can't just come over for the, oh, it's the home opener, I just want to see it once, and then maybe I'll come back another time whenever I feel like it. No, guys, you got to come every single home match. Every single match. You got to come to the fantastic, brand new facility, the Temple of Football, the Cathedral of Football, the Synagogue of Football, everything. This is why Red Bull built this. You guys got to come over every single home match. See, it doesn't matter if it's a lesser side coming in. The idea is to make sure that we are, or you guys are, loud enough to sit in the seats and sing and chant and yell and do everything and anything possible to help Red Bulls get 3 points. They will get the goals into the net. Have to do is to sing loud and be proud. Yeah, it was nice having the lower bowl filled. Obviously, the ESC and the Garden State supporters, they did a fantastic job once again. But you know what? Those that were there, a fantastic job too, because after being down a goal, it willed them to get better, and they did, and they pulled out a comeback victory. You guys cannot just stay home because either A, it's freezing, or coming. There's a roof over our heads. There is a roof over our heads to keep out the weather as much as possible. Guys, you're not going to Giant Stadium anymore. There's no excuses now. We, or you, have to come and support this club and to show everyone in the tri-state area that this stadium is something special and something spectacular. If it's about driving down there because of the way that, you know what, then you take the train. You take Jersey Transit, you go to Secaucus Junction, you transfer for Newark Penn Station, then you can take the trolley over, or you can take the PATH train one stop. Or if you live in Hoboken in Jersey City, or if you're by a PATH station, then you take the PATH train to Newark. And then you stop at Harrison before you even get to Newark. It's a wonderful place to be. Inside the press area, and whenever I walk through these double doors to walk into the stadium and sit in my seat, and I feel the emotion of all of you guys, and especially when I see the players so up close. The last 2 years over at Giant Stadium, the last 2 or 3 years, I didn't have that feeling because you're all the way up in the press box. It was like the 9th floor. You can't watch a match like that. The angles are tougher. Here, the angles are perfect. Come on, fellas. Come on, families. Come to Red Bull Arena every single match. And it doesn't matter if it's against Dallas or if it's against Colorado or if it's against Toronto FC or if it's even against DC United or the Los Angeles Galaxy. It doesn't matter, and it should not matter. Come to Red Bull Arena, come watch the match, and come support into the playoffs. 3 wins in 4 matches, 9 points total. It's a fabulous start for this club after what happened last year. Now let's see what happens this coming Saturday afternoon against the Philadelphia Union, and at the same time, let's see what happens in the Open Cup qualifier against the same club next week, Tuesday night. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Daniel Foreston calling, or shall I say announcing. Thank you very much for listening to my show. I'm going to try and give you another quality show next week, and let's hope the phone lines will be better and we won't have any more incidents like what happened with Mr. Hank Alexander. I'd like to thank Hank Alexander, Jeff Reed, Warren Jones, Mr. Alex Powder of the Minnesota Stars, and of course, I'd like to thank Red Bull New York for allowing me to come into Red Bull Arena and to interview the players and the coaches after the matches. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Daniel Feuerstein. Next week, 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific for Red Bulls and anything and everything American soccer at home or abroad. Thank you very much and have a good afternoon. Enjoy your football.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.